Today's program is brought to you by Myriad Restaurant Group. For more information, visit myriadrestaurantgroup.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen, a cooking store located at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes and Stitcher and anywhere else you happen to be listening, and reach out to me. Feel free if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, or if you have any ideas for guests, I'm actively looking for an astronaut. I want to interview an astronaut on the show, so if anybody knows an astronaut, current or former or future, would love to interview an astronaut on the show. Anyway, today is episode number 52 of Feast Your Ears, and I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio Laura O'Neill of Van Leeuwen Artisan Ice Cream, Indonesian restaurant Selamat Pagi in Greenpoint, and also one half of the musical duo Laura and Greg. Thanks, Laura, for joining me.
Hi. Good to be here.
Laura, can you just introduce yourself? When you meet someone and they say, you know, if they don't recognize you from the cover of Dairy Foods magazine, which you were recently featured on, what do you say you do? Because you do a lot of different stuff.
I guess, like, the first thing I say is that I run an ice cream company. And I don't like to assume that people necessarily know of Van Leeuwen already, but they often do.
That's very smart, actually.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, you know, it's Van Leeuwen, and they'll be like, what? Come on. And then other times they don't know it, and I'm like, huh, like, yeah, have they been living under a rock?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, so I guess, yeah, my number one thing is Van Leeuwen ice cream, so... Yeah, I'm an ice cream lady.
Awesome. And so for those that do know Van Leeuwen, I hope you've tasted it and love it. We love it very much at the Brooklyn Kitchen. And for those of you that haven't, what is special about Van Leeuwen ice cream?
So myself and my two partners, Ben and Pete Van Leeuwen, started Van Leeuwen back in 2008 out of a truck. And the driving force for us was to create really pure ice cream, just using a handful of ingredients. We saw that there was a big gap in the market for good ice cream out of trucks, and started seeing the kind of things that were going into ice cream. And we were like, what happens if we make really pure ice cream the way you would make it at home, but do it on a larger scale, and find the best fruits and nuts and chocolate, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, your ice cream is so rich.
Yeah.
And I assume that has to do with the fat content and also with the egg yolk content.
Definitely. Yeah. So we don't use stabilizers, which is really common in ice cream making. So we use a lot of heavy cream. We use a lot of egg yolks. So it's definitely real ice cream. It's not low fat in any capacity.
Yeah.
And then, about 4 years ago, we started doing vegan ice cream as well, which has been very successful. And we're really proud of that product as well.
Which I will say, as someone who always, whenever I see like the word vegan emblazoned on things, it often feels like a marketing ploy,
right.
You know, or things that are like where beef jerky says gluten free. I'm like, well, yeah, of course it's gluten free. It's
right.
You know, and I, you know, I always have that gut reaction to it. But I will say that your vegan ice cream, I think, is possibly more delicious than your regular ice cream.
Yeah, I think I would
really,
have to agree.
Really good.
Yeah. And that was the thing with the vegan, is we didn't want to bring something to the line that was not as good as the classic.
Right.
So it was really important to make it awesome. And Ben did a really awesome job at developing that.
And what do you use for a base for the vegan?
So we're using cocoa butter, so the fat from chocolate, cashews, we make our own cashew milk, and then coconut as well. And the reason that we do cashew as well is because coconut has a really strong flavor.
Right.
So it does make awesome ice cream, but it doesn't lend itself well to every flavor.
Right.
But yeah, we kind of just like sat back and we were like, where do these fats exist naturally in nature? And how can we make awesome ice cream without it being just like soy or almond milk with like a ton of gums and fillers to make it pretend to be ice cream?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that is the sort of key thing about it, is that we see, I mean, I lived with a bunch of vegans when I was in college. I wasn't vegan, but I cooked a lot of vegan food.
Uh-huh.
And there was always this sort of, you know, there was always a need for a meat replacement.
Yeah.
And I really don't like that stuff. I feel like, you know, like vegetables are awesome. There's delicious vegetables and fruits out there that should be celebrated. So the idea of using gums and fillers and sort of, you know, stabilizers in order to make it feel like real ice cream, like just make a really delicious vegan ice. I don't know. You don't call it ice cream, right? What do you, is it?
I mean, we just call it ice cream, but technically we have to call it non-dairy frozen dessert.
Got it.
Which doesn't sound as delicious.
No, it doesn't at all. But it is really delicious. So everybody should definitely should seek it out. So you guys started as one truck, right? And now how many trucks do you have?
Now we have 6 trucks. Okay. So we have 4 still here in New York City, and then we have 2 out in LA. So Pete Van Leeuwen moved out to LA about 3 years ago and took 2 trucks.
Cool. And are you guys going to grow that and then move to the middle of the country? Are you guys going to like take over from the coast?
Yeah, we're sort of trying to figure that out. It took us, you know, sort of 7 years to get anywhere else outside of New York.
That's a big leap. I mean, you had to send one of the founders there.
Exactly.
Manage it,
so. And, you know, we're not a huge company. And so it really does take one of us being there to make sure that it's done right. And, you know, lucky for us, being in California suits Pete. So he's happy out there now. He's like, I'll try it. And now I think he's like, I'm never coming back. But yeah, so we started with trucks, and then simultaneously people in LA, or developers, I suppose, were approaching us to open in new developments because they knew the ice cream from New York City. So that was kind of cool. They were like, oh, we love your ice cream. We're like, oh, we're already here, like testing the market with the trucks. So now we have 2 trucks out there, and we just opened our 3rd store in Franklin Village.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as far as the trucks go, I mean, when you guys got into the truck game, I mean, I've always felt from the outside, and I did a little bit of research before the show, you know, that the ice cream truck thing always seemed really like sort of mafia, right? Like sort of like mobbed up in a way that there was like turf. And I mean, you know, the same thing I'm sure is true of like the coffee carts and the halal carts and in Midtown and stuff. Did you guys catch any flack for being like an upstart when you brought a new truck to the streets?
Yeah, we did. I mean, I think we were very innocent and like maybe a little naive when we started. People had told, like, I remember someone telling me, they were like, oh, be careful, like, someone's going to set your truck on fire, which never happened, thankfully. But we did, like, have some trouble when we would go into Midtown, because those routes, which, I mean, they shouldn't be owned, but they kind of are in an unofficial way. So our whole thing was just like, let's pioneer our own locations. And we really wanted to not be like kind of moving around and ringing the bell and playing music. We wanted to be, the whole concept was that we could have these trucks, which are great for serving ice cream, but it's also like virtually rent free, and you're down in like Soho or you're in Williamsburg. So yeah, luckily we haven't had too much trouble with dealing with mafia.
Yeah, I found some articles from earlier this year about a big sort of, I guess, turf war between Mr. Softy and Master Softy.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a quote from, I guess, the guys in Master Softy who sort of feel like they own Midtown, that if anybody, like, that no other ice cream trucks are allowed between 34th and 60th Street from river to river. Like, that's their turf.
Yeah, that's
in, like, a very serious, like,
That's a real thing. We haven't, no one's like hurt us over it, but we don't go there.
And so where can people find your trucks normally? Like, do you have like a rough schedule of where the trucks go?
We do. So we're in Soho every day during the season, which is like May through Halloween. We park by the Apple Store, Prince and Green. And then Williamsburg is one of our best spots as well. So which is interesting because when we first started going there, it wasn't, I mean, we've all seen the neighborhood change, but it wasn't, I remember the first year trying out Bedford and North 7th, and it wasn't great. And then we went back again, like, I think the following year, and then it became like one of our best locations.
Cool.
We've also been coming to Bushwick, which is really cool because I feel like 4 or 5 years ago, we would have made $5 here, and now we can actually do like a good trade.
Nice.
So that's cool as well.
And so you mentioned the season ending. A couple days ago.
Yeah.
And what happened, you know, in the winter, you guys obviously have your brick and mortar scoop shops. Those are open year round.
Yeah.
And then are the trucks just sort of dormant in the winter? And
do you
send
much.
Them west to California?
We don't. I mean, it would just be too much. It would cost too much to bother doing that.
Sure.
But we have, so the California trucks are year round, obviously. And then the New York trucks, we still do private events, like the film sets. Will often rent us to come out and do like hot chocolate and ice cream. We used to do coffee on the trucks. But when the snow comes, no one really wants to be standing at a truck getting coffee. They're just going to go inside somewhere.
Yeah.
So we just figured that we would focus on the stores and the trucks in summer.
Got it. I spoke with a friend who is Australian. You're from Australia.
Yeah.
And I learned about Gay Time ice cream.
Oh, yeah. The Golden Gay Time.
Yeah.
Which another inappropriate Australian thing.
Which, I mean, I have to sort of tell everybody, maybe we can put up a photo, the photo of one of their ads on the show page after when the show is online. But one of their catchphrases is, it's hard to have a gay time by yourself.
Oh, my God.
Which,
forgot about that.
Which I just thought was pretty awesome. Were you inspired by Gay Time ice cream?
Maybe subconsciously. I did. It's funny that you mention it because I saw something that resembled a Gay Time in the freezer at the grocery store the other day. It was like a Good Humor something or other. But yeah, I don't know about Gay Time. I think the only ice cream I really ate growing up was like the Dixie cups, like the little like vanilla cups, and you would put the chocolate syrup on top.
Oh, the ones that come with a little wooden spoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have really good memories of those.
Yeah. My dad actually was visiting recently, and we were talking about like wondering if Dixie was like a copyrighted name, because he's like, maybe Van Leeuwen Dixies.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it is copywritten.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
So now, you know, so people can find your ice cream in trucks, and they can find it at your brick and mortar shops. Mm-hmm. And then how many flavors do you have packaged?
We have 26 now.
26. And those come in a standard ice cream pint,
right?
Which is really
those
14
are,
ounces.
It's a 14 ounce. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though we all call it a pint.
Right. Yeah.
Sort of industry standard.
We actually just, it's now a 14 ounce like Häagen-Dazs, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, just so consumers are aware that is, you know, we all call it a pint, but at some point Häagen-Dazs or someone else figured out that they could make it 14 ounces and they could save those 2 ounces and put it in the next one and make more money.
Right? I mean, we don't go on the record calling it a pint
of course
anymore, but yes.
But in retail, we all do.
Yeah.
Right? We say, you know, we need to restock the pints.
Right.
Even though they're not actually pints.
Yeah. In Australia, we might say punnet.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's just a different way of saying
I don't know
pint.
What it is, but that's, punnet of ice cream.
Speaking of the Dixie cup, so do you have other other retail package products in the works for Van Leeuwen?
We definitely want to do a novelty size, and then we are thinking a lot about novelty items as well.
Sure.
So we have a new factory. We moved our production recently from 800 square feet to 5,000 square feet.
Wow, that's a big jump.
Yeah, so there was, until 9 months ago, we were making 100% of Van Leeuwen ice cream in an 800 square foot space.
And for some context, like how much in the height of summer, how much ice cream was that?
I mean, I don't even know. That's like all the trucks, all the stores,
I mean, gosh,
LA,
the milk must
pints.
Have just been coming in all the time, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, we move everything really fast, so storage is not such an issue, but it's mind boggling to think about what we were doing in that tiny space behind Selamat.
Yeah. And so that's a good segue into talking about Selamat Pagi is an Indonesian restaurant.
Indonesian inspired.
Yeah, that you guys opened. When did you open it?
We just celebrated 4 years.
4 years.
Last week.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And part of that move, that's in Greenpoint, it's on Driggs Avenue. And that part of that, as I understand it, was because it had a kitchen in the back that you could use for ice cream production.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And so that's where that production was taking place. And then you had this space in the front to do something with. And so why Indonesian inspired?
So Ben and I, when we used to be a couple and we're not anymore, but when we, would go back to Australia to visit my parents, we would sometimes go to Bali, because it's not super cheap to fly there, but once you get there, it's very cheap. And Australia is really expensive to travel around. So it was always like a better option to go to Bali. So Ben and I, we really fell in love with that food and that style of cooking. And, when we came back to Brooklyn, Ben was like scrambling eggs in coconut oil and like playing around with turmeric root. And we were, once we took over, so we found an old restaurant that had the kitchen, and we knew we could make the ice cream there and have an office. And then when we had that storefront vacant, we were like, well, we don't want to do a Van Leeuwen right here because it's really close to Manhattan Ave.
Right.
So let's do an Indonesian restaurant and see if people love it as much as we do.
And they do.
Yeah. So it seemed like a real departure from what we were doing, but the kind of like ideals behind the philosophy of, you know, the ingredients and the cooking is really similar to Van Leeuwen.
And you guys recently expanded, right?
We did. Yeah. We doubled in size.
So with the move of the ice cream production out of that space, you were able to open up the restaurant a little more?
Yeah, exactly. Because Salamat was is a very small restaurant, and we just figured if we can seat more people all at once, then that's a better thing than having people wait 45 minutes to sit down.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors. When we come back, I want to talk about your music career and also about No Lights, No Lycra. And this one's called Young Blood by The Hollows. We'll be right back.
We're proud to count the Myriad Restaurant Group as a business member of the Heritage Radio Network. Created by renowned restaurateur Drew Nieperen, Myriad consists of a diverse roster of restaurants, each one unique and memorable. Delicious food, excellent service, and genuine value are at the core of Myriad's storied history. Tribeca Grill, celebrating its 25th anniversary, helped define the Tribeca neighborhood and is the perennial winner of the Wine Spectator's Grand Award. Nobu New York has innovated new style Japanese cuisine for over 20 years, now joined by Nobu Next Door and Nobu 57, cooking Nobu's revered signature dishes. Batard, serving modern European cuisine, was named the best new restaurant of 2014 by Pete Wells and the New York Times, and best new restaurant in America for 2015 by the James Beard Foundation, as well as earning a Michelin star. Myriad also serves up great ballpark dining at the Acela Club at Citi Field and tasty burgers at the Daily Burger at Madison Square Garden. The common thread is to be a good citizen in the communities they serve through the support of numerous charitable organizations. For more information, visit MyriadRestaurantGroup.com.
Welcome back. Feast your ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and in the studio, if you're just joining us, I have Laura O'Neill of Van Leeuwen Artisan Ice Cream, and also co-owner of the Indonesian restaurant Salamat Pagi in Greenpoint, and one half of the musical duo, Laura and Greg, and that's actually what I want to sort of move on to now. So as if you weren't busy enough running an ice cream company with trucks and stores in both New York and L.A., and running a restaurant, you also find time to be a musician. So tell me a little bit about the duo.
Sure. So, Laura and Greg actually kind of came about because of our vegan ice cream.
Oh, nice.
I met Greg at the Manhattan Inn, which we used to have a store connected to that bar in Greenpoint. And we had just started making vegan ice cream, and Greg is vegan. And when I learned that he was vegan, I was like, oh, you got to come next door and try this chocolate ice cream we've been making. And then it was over that scoop that we got to talking about music and kind of joked about starting a band. I've always sung, but I've never done anything properly with music until now, or the last couple of years. So we joked about starting a band, and then actually followed through with getting together for practice, and realized there was something like good there between us, and Laura and Greg was born.
Awesome. And you guys have a full-length album out, mm-hmm. right? And then an EP that's coming.
We actually have one full-length out for sure, and then the EP is already out, but cool. Just digitally.
Great.
And then we're going to start recording our next record in the next few weeks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Everybody can check that out at lauraandgregmusicallwrittenout.com, and you can listen to the EP on there.
Yep, it's all on there.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about No Lights, No Lycra, which is also somewhat music related.
So No Lights, No Lycra is a dance jam in the dark that I host every Tuesday night in Greenpoint. It happens at the church on Russell Street, 129 Russell. And No Lights, No Lycra is a concept that started in Melbourne, where I'm from, by my best friend Alice Glenn and Heidi Barrett. And it was basically just created to be a free space for movement, somewhere you can kind of go and dance around and It's dark. It's not completely pitch black, but the lights are out. So you don't have to worry about what you look like or how you're dancing or who's looking at you or who's there. It's just like somewhere fun to go and dance. And that's actually now been happening in Brooklyn for over 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so that's on Tuesdays.
Yeah, every Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And anybody is welcome, all ages?
Yeah. I mean, if people bring really small children, they just have to make sure they take care of them.
Sure.
Kind of keep them close to them. But yeah, we've had a few kids come over the years.
Cool. I mean, I'm just thinking that, you know, Moxie, who's 7.
Yeah, she'd really love it for sure.
A lot. And what, you know, do you have anything else that I haven't mentioned that you do?
I think that's it. Right. Yeah.
That's a lot. Do you guys have any shows coming up?
We're going to be playing a SoFar Sound show. Do you know about those?
No.
It's an organization that does like secret shows. So you can sign up on their website and you'll end up seeing 3 bands stripped back in a space that you won't find out the address of until the day. Hmm. So we have one of those coming up later this month.
People were interested, they have to go to...
Yeah, actually, it's sofarsounds.org, okay. I believe. And then I think we're going to be running a competition on our Twitter to give away tickets to that. Cool. But yeah, at the moment, we're going to be focusing on recording. So we don't have like a ton of stuff booked right now. Kind of got to bunker down and make the new record.
Yeah. And do you guys invite, do you have other musicians who play with you when you do stuff in the studio?
Yeah, sometimes it'll be other musicians or we'll just play all the parts. And then I think for this next, when we start kind of playing the next record out, we're probably going to get a drummer. I think it would be nice to kind of be able to fully realize the sound live.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good to have the time being kept.
Yeah, right?
Sometimes
totally. It is tricky though because we did choose the name Laura and Greg, so
yeah,
really we have to find someone called And.
That shouldn't be that hard.
No, think, right? This is Brooklyn, right?
Yeah, exactly. Were there other band names in the running, or did you immediately know that you just wanted to be your names?
We didn't really, it wasn't a conscious decision. Like we started playing open mics and Greg would sign us up as Laura and Greg. And then we started playing real shows really quickly. And I think it felt really silly to suddenly be like, oh, we're the Sparrows, you know,
right.
And everything. I mean, band names are really tricky. So even though sometimes we're like, oh, it's just Laura and Greg, like, and it sounds kind of weird. I don't know. It's like, whatever, it's our names.
Yeah. What brought you to the U.S. originally from Australia?
Yeah, so I'd actually never been to New York before I moved here.
Wow.
But I'd been to America once when I was 5, and I basically remember the teacup ride at Disneyland, and that's about it. I was visiting my brother in London in 2006, and I met Ben Van Leeuwen, and he was studying abroad. He was doing a semester there, and we started dating long distance, and he came and visited me in Australia, and I guess things hotted up, and I was kind of ready for a change, and
sure.
He was graduating from college, and his brother Pete, our other business partner, was living in Brooklyn, and so he was like, I'm going to go move in with my brother in Brooklyn. Why don't you move to Brooklyn? And I was like, well, why don't I move to Brooklyn?
Right.
And
sure.
Then, and then sort of a few months before I moved over, he called me and he was like, I have this idea. I think we should do ice cream trucks when you get here. And I was like, all right, let's do it.
Wow.
So we were together for a few years, got married, still technically married, but haven't been together for about 5 years. So we're just a weird modern family business now.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically got here right into starting the ice cream company.
Like yeah.
It was like...
Pretty much. I arrived like May of 2007 and we launched June of 2008. So a lot of that first year was the kind of legwork of getting the business started and developing the recipes. But I had a lot of like kind of odd jobs. I wasn't really technically supposed to be working, so... I was sometimes getting paid in Ben's name and I had like a little notebook that I called the Ben Bank and I'd be like, all right, you have like 200 of my dollars and I need 50 of them. I worked at like an art gallery and a record label and we were like secret shoppers for a vodka company.
Oh, wow.
And just like whatever we kind of, Ben worked at Dressler. Just paying the bills. It wasn't as expensive back then though. I think Ben and I like...
Yeah.
We split a room for like $500 or something.
I mean, I feel like that kind of like looking backwards at New York is always really hard. I heard an interview some years ago, with a poet, Gerard Malanga, who had moved to New York, I think from Ohio, if I have the story right, to be an assistant to Warhol.
Mm, wow.
Like in the 60s.
Yeah.
And was talking about how you could live in New York for nothing.
Yeah.
Literally nothing. Like, he would babysit for people's kids a couple nights a week, uh-huh. and that was it. Like, that was all the money that he needed, because he got a room for nothing in Soho or the Village or whatever.
Man.
And, like, that stuff's just not really possible. Even, you know, accounting for inflation and stuff, it's still not even possible.
I feel like Oasis falafel can keep you alive.
Sure.
It's like $3. You can live on that for a while.
Yeah. Taylor, my wife, always said that her sort of, like, economic, like, you know, her like, economic basis for judging a place was always how many packs of instant ramen you can buy for a dollar.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
And, like, that always has to, you know, there's an economy reference there and what that costs.
Yeah.
The ramen index.
Mm-hmm. Totally. It's funny, though, because I feel like, I mean, you probably feel this as well, but we've been so busy, like, with our heads down with our businesses for the last decade, and, like, I feel like I've just kind of emerged now, and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like,
for sure. I mean, looking at where you're, you know, I guess it's your flagship store in Williamsburg now,
mm-hmm.
Over on the north side, you know, I walked past that spot recently, and it's just not, like, that whole neighborhood is not what
no
it used
way.
To be like
yeah.
at all. It's mm-hmm. really amazing. I was at the William Vale. I mean, I have a pen. I'm holding a pen that I got from the William Vale Hotel the other day. And, you know, to me, it's fascinating to see that kind of thing and that progression happen. Being there and on, they have this sort of second floor, like, park there that has a beautiful view of Manhattan for now. It won't once the next building is built that's between Wythe and Kent.
But actually, my parents stayed there for a couple of nights while they were here, and they learned that the William Vale, I think this is true, have actually bought that lot in front of them, and they have no plans to build more than 8-story or more than the park level, so that is the only hotel that is never going to lose its view.
Oh, interesting.
Unless they somehow develop right down on the water.
Right,
but I don't know.
No, I don't think they can develop.
Yeah,
right down the
but I think maybe the Wythe Hotel is potentially going to lose its view.
Oh, interesting.
I don't
sure.
know. Yeah. I
mean, right. There's that other building that's right next to the Wythe there.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So the thing that I was thinking about in walking around the sort of William Vale and that sort of lot there and that they've created is that it's one of the first spaces in Williamsburg and really in Brooklyn that comes to mind that's so engineered to make it so different from what was there before.
Yeah.
Like walking on in their courtyard, you like realize that there's stuff underneath it that's not just dirt. Right.
Right.
Like it's this engineered environment, and being on that park on the second story there that's over a retail space is very, you know, it's reminiscent to me of places in Manhattan or places in Tokyo and, you know, sort of this type of development that I don't think we've really seen yet.
Yeah, definitely.
In Williamsburg and Greenpoint.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly were like, if we don't get into Williamsburg now, we will never be able to.
Right.
And it's like our home ground, you know?
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
Yeah,
but
totally. So I wanted to find out in the questions that I sent you before the show, you said your favorite place to sit was your parents' good room.
Yeah.
What is that?
Do you have that? Like, do your parents, are they like, oh, that's the good room?
No.
Like, it's like the nice room in the house that you don't really sit in. And
oh, for when guests come over?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's not, I don't come from like a very fancy family or
sure.
It's just like that is like the one sitting room that we don't use every day.
Right.
But yeah, it's a really nice room. It has like light from three directions, which is always great for the soul. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like I just, when I'm home in Melbourne, I always find myself kind of sitting there and talking on the phone to friends or whatever.
Do you get back to Australia often?
Yeah, I try and go back for Christmas every year. My parents come and visit every couple of years or so I don't feel like I'm ever sort of too far from home.
What's the first thing that you eat when you get off the plane in Melbourne?
I probably make like an avocado bread roll at home with like salt and lemon. Yeah, my mom always has like really nice fresh bread in the house. And
nice.
Yeah.
I was talking with the same Australian friend who told me about Gay Time ice cream.
Uh-huh.
We were having a discussion the other day about avocado toast.
Right.
And about how it's actually really an Australian
creation,
potentially.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true.
The internet says that it was first on a menu. Actually, I think in Melbourne.
Right.
Well, maybe it was in Sydney, I don't remember. But somewhere in Australia was the first time it appeared on a menu.
We were like the first ones to be happy to pay $15 for something that's worth like $2.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely, it's on every cafe menu in Australia for sure. Yeah. And I see it a lot around here. But I don't know. I think people, I mean, there's lots of nice avocados in California. So
yeah.
I'm sure people have been doing it at home, but it just hasn't been such a trend until
Although
now.
Avocados have gotten really expensive in the past few weeks because the season in California is over.
Right.
And the Mexican growers are all on strike.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's why they're expensive
right now. Gosh.
The growers and the transport, they're all on strike for better wages.
Yeah, man. I was trying to buy one off the deli guy the other day, like, because you know how they have the ones for their sandwiches?
Yep.
And I was like, do you have any? And they're like, and I'm like, can I buy that one? And he was like, no. And I'm like, there's no price for that one. Like, I was like trying to make a salad and I needed one ripe avocado.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was either like terribly overripe ones or rock hard ones at all the other delis. He wouldn't sell it though. There was no price for that. Yeah.
Man, I wonder how much that sandwich cost.
I don't know. Yeah, right? Maybe I should have just got an
avocado sandwich
and scraped it into my salad.
You could have just asked for an avocado sandwich to hold the bread.
Yeah, right? Leave the skin on, please. Yeah. Don't cut it.
So we have this big election coming up. Mm-hmm. Those of you listening probably have heard about it. It's next week. I can't wait for it to be over. You know, we were talking a little bit before the show about both of us owning businesses and sort of whether or not you sort of like, do you wear your political connections or your political mm-hmm. preferences sort of on your sleeve or in the windows of your business?
Right.
Do you guys at Van Leeuwen?
Not so much like within the stores, although I did my East Village team have a tip jar at the moment that says tip me or I'll vote for Trump. Which I was like, normally I'd be like, that's unacceptable, guys. Yeah. But I was like, all right, like, that's fine. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of tricky. I mean, I was definitely sporting a Bernie t-shirt
sure.
a few months ago and, I became an American last year, so I get to vote,
nice.
Which is exciting.
Great.
But yeah, it's kind of tricky. I mean, we don't want to alienate anybody, but,
right.
At the same time, obviously it's like a scary and very important time for
sure.
America.
We were talking about how as business owners, we feel like we do good things, right? We,
mm-hmm.
we employ people who we pay a living wage to, and we use our money responsibly, and everybody's money is the same,
right?
Right? Everybody's giving us US dollars, whether they're a Trump supporter or a Bernie supporter or a
exactly.
Hillary supporter or, you know, a Zephyr Teachout supporter, like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on the one hand, not sort of saying who you are going to vote for, who you're supporting as a business, means that you're not alienating anybody.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's definitely hard because I feel like we're in a position where we are constantly feeling like we need to sort of say who we're for,
right?
In one way or another. And it's gotten worse. I don't know how you feel as an outsider who's moved to this country and sort of looking at it, but I feel like in my lifetime, this election is it's way more polarized
mm-hmm.
than I feel like it's almost ever been.
Yeah.
And you know, part of that I attribute some of that to Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his rhetoric is coming from a place of, you know, of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from a place of putting people down. It's coming from a place of, you know, if you don't agree, then you're somehow like bad,
right?
Like you're a bad person and you're wrong and there's something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't feel like that's been the same rhetoric in past elections.
I mean, I think like we've had decent people for the most part
sure.
as the candidates. And
sure.
I think like, obviously that's what's different about this election.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't really matter what Trump's policies were with the
right.
way he's like delivering things. Like it's just, there's no way you could give him your vote
right.
or I could give him my vote.
Sure. And I mean, I will say the same thing. I mean, I'm not voting for him,
yeah.
You know, and then that gets into a question of like, as business leaders, right. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we are the heads of our business, but I'm not going to tell my staff who to vote for.
Right.
Right. And so that becomes another question is like, if we were to put up a sign for Hillary in our business, and
yeah.
our staff don't agree with it, then you're sort of, you know, you don't want to make your staff uncomfortable at work and, you know, they're welcome to vote for whomever they feel is the right candidate.
Definitely. And yeah, I mean, I think with the tip jar, like they can have those signs up for their shift. And if someone's offended by that and wants to change
sure.
it for the next shift, they can do that.
Yep.
But
totally.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time. But Laura, thank you. It's been really fun.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
Talk.
Do you have anything else you want to mention on the show? Either things that are going on with Van Leeuwen, things about Selamat Pagi, things about Lauren Gregg, anything?
Not really. I mean, we have, I think I was telling you, like, we have 26 flavors, so we've added a lot of new flavors to our non-pint line in grocery stores, which has been really exciting. We have new packaging, really beautiful.
It is really beautiful.
Thank you. We worked with Pentagram, which is a design firm on that. Yeah. They're really awesome. They gave us a very good deal, so we're really grateful. Salem Up Puggies had a renovation, so definitely go check it out. There's pumpkin pancakes on the brunch menu. And that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for listening to Feast Your Ears. Big thank you to Kristen Baylor, who's my producer here, and David Tadashore for engineering the show today. You can find Feast Your Ears as well as lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can follow me on Instagram at the Food Baller, and you can follow Laura. Laura has a lot of social media handles at Laura VLAIC, which I assume stands for Van Leeuwen Artisan Ice Cream.
Yes, it's not my Slavic name.
Or you can follow Van Leeuwen Ice Cream at Van Leeuwen Ice Cream. You can follow the restaurant at Selamat Pagi BK, and you can follow at Laura Greg Music for information about the band. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.